Welcome, everyone. This is the Recovery from Relapse workshop. Everyone's in the right place? All good. My name is Karen. I'm an abstinent compulsive overeater and food addict.
Hi, Karen.
And I have been asked to lead this workshop. I want to start with a little bit about my background. I'm from Largo, Florida, and I've been in program as of January 11th, 20 years. My current abstinence as of right now is 9 years, 11 months, 21 days. I have 10 years somewhere in the middle of February. We'll get to that. So thanks to my friend, I have a PowerPoint presentation. There's a theme going here. I love flamingos. I'm not sure if it's because they have skinny legs or they can stand on one foot and balance, but I love flamingos, so there's a theme. Definition of relapse, and this is from AA. Slip back, return. Oh, thank you, Joan. A recurrence of a disease after a period of quality or state of being alike with something else. Relapse is not a given. You don't have to relapse. It's not a requirement. My experience has been, though, I had one relapse. And I've spent a lot of time in my 12-step work going over what led me to that relapse. More importantly, what in my recovery is going to ensure that I don't have another one? Because although I've been blessed with recovery, I know that there's always the potential for another relapse. So what are the steps that I need to do on a daily basis? Protect myself. Oh, thank you, Jerry. My prompter, thank you. What I'm going to do is this is an hour and a half. So I'm going to spend about an hour and 5 minutes on the presentation. And then during this time, if you have a question, there are papers and pens on the table. Write down your question. We're going to pass around a basket at the end, and I will answer as many questions as I can get through. Hopefully, I will have some questions. This is your way to interact, if you don't want to stand up and say, I got a question, you can write it down and I will answer it. Either you can be anonymous. You don't have to put your name on it. I would ask you to write legibly. I say that because I'm left-handed, and not as an excuse, but I have a poor penmanship. And I spend most of my time typing on a computer, so I can't read my own writing, So which is a really good thing when I'm doing my journaling. I don't ever go back and read it because I can't. Okay, so recovery, definition of recovery, regaining health, self-awareness, balance, and composure in one's life. Isn't that awesome? When I came into program January 11, 1992, in Chelsea, Massachusetts, I wasn't desperate. I wasn't in a lot of pain because I didn't know. I didn't know what recovery was. I was kind of around program from 90 to 92. 91 I was for January 11th. And my top weight was 359 pounds. And what I've been taught in program when I speak is not to hide behind a podium so that people can see physical recovery. Hopefully you will hear emotional and spiritual recovery. So I'm maintaining about a 210-pound weight loss. Thanks to all of you. Thank you to my higher power, which I choose to call God. Thank you to sponsors who put up with me when I was angry and resentful. You're responsible for my recovery. I'm responsible. I have a big part. God has a huge part in my recovery. But all of you are responsible, too. And I thank all of you. So recovery is regaining health. Now, when I came in, excuse me, I'm getting over bronchitis, so I get a little caught up. When I came in, I was borderline diabetic. I couldn't walk very far, and I had a job where I was on my feet all day. I was, from the time I was 11, which coincides with my first diet, till the time I came in program, I had bouts of clinical depression, but I was okay. You know, there was nothing wrong with me. And I was going to prove to all of you I had a small weight problem. I didn't care if I was healthy because my doctor had told me that if I didn't do something, I would be dead in 10 years. I thought he was overreacting. When he wrote on the top of my chart, morbidly obese, I was offended. Offended. How dare he write that? So I didn't have any hope of regaining health because I never really experienced health. I was fat from childhood. I've done all the diets except the ones, the new ones. I haven't, in 20 years, there's been a lot more come out I haven't done. Thank you, God, I don't have to go on a diet in January. So I didn't have any idea about regaining health because I didn't believe myself to be unhealthy. I have two herniated discs in my back, and there are times when I could not walk. I have bone spurs in my heels, directly result of my obesity. So I didn't understand health. Self-awareness? Now, I've been in therapy a long time. I had no clue of self-awareness. None. Absolutely not. When I ended with my last, not quite my last therapist, but when I ended with one of my therapists, he said, are there any unresolved issues? I said, yeah, I'd just like to know why I eat. 4 years of therapy, thousands of dollars out of my pocket. I walked into one OA meeting, and I heard, you're a compulsive overeater and a food addict. I didn't have to pay for that. Balance and composure. My life was so out of balance. There was no balance in my life. None. I had the trappings of normalcy. And that was my goal in my life, was I wanted to be normal. I wanted to be like everyone else. I wasn't. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I'm the youngest of five. And most of my brothers and sisters are considerably older than I am. So when I came along, they were, and I was old enough, you know, six, seven, eight, they were teenagers. And in talking to my siblings, you know, about things that happened in the family, they said, well, you weren't there. You weren't born yet. I said, I was there. Where were you? I was anonymous before it became OA. I was a wall. I would blend in. That, in my family, was my role because if I blended in, I wouldn't get hit. I wouldn't get yelled at. I wouldn't be noticed. Because enough people in my life noticed me because I was fat. Teachers, strangers, other kids, family members. No matter what I did, fat defined me. So there was no balance in my life. Composure? I was out there most of the time. I was either angry, raging, resentful, or I was the life of the party. I didn't swing much in the middle. I was either extreme. To the point at work, people wouldn't talk to me because they were afraid of me. They'll say, I would walk in and they'd say, oh, this is not a good day for her. We're not talking to her. In OA, when I first came into my first meetings, back seat. I sat back there, and they were huggers and greeters, and I said, don't hug me, don't touch me. I want to be here. I'm angry. Stay away from me. And some of them did. They were really afraid of me. I was afraid of me. So recovery has been a gift. That came. Can I have the next one? Quote from the AA, big book. We had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. That's not easy. Because I don't know about you, I want the easier, softer way. And I'm going to fight tooth and nail not to do what I absolutely have to do until it is absolutely necessary. Because I don't want to feel pain. I don't want to feel anything. I don't want to be challenged. It's too hard. I can't do it. And that was me. The pack of ethics. That was me. I couldn't fully concede to our innermost selves. That means I had to look at me. I couldn't do it. Remember, I've been in therapy a long time. I still couldn't do it. I couldn't do that. Now I'll take the next one. Thank you. Most of us have tried to deny to ourselves that we have this disease. Okay, what excuses did we come up for? I know mine. That I didn't have a disease. Big boned. Love that. I prayed for a thyroid condition. It was my mother's fault. She was a good cook. I was the one that had to clean the table, so I was left with the dirty dishes. I'm not meant to be thin. By whose standard? I'm not meant to be thin. The lies this disease told me and held me captive for all those years. I didn't want a disease. I would have rather had diabetes. Diabetes, my family history is really pathetic. And when I go to the doctors now, when I list all the, they ask you family history, I check off most of the stuff. And then the doctor looks at me and said, are you sure? I had one doctor ask me if my father was really an alcoholic because he lived to almost 95. They couldn't believe that someone could abuse their body for 90-some years and be alive. And I said, well, yeah, I think we qualified here. I don't have any doubt about that. So my family history is really poor. So I could stand having diabetes, high blood pressure, bad back, the things that I had, okay, that's it. But to have this as a disease, I had a hard time accepting that. But I have a disease today, and I'm relieved that I have one. I accept it today. Next one. I love the big book. I love our OA literature, but the big book sometimes just grabs me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. It says self-delusion. It doesn't say delusion of others. It doesn't say seeking others. Pitying others. It's all about me. This is all about me and what I'm willing to do. And when I did step on toes and they stepped back, I got angry. How dare you? How dare you say that to me? How dare you question what I eat? When I was right before recovery, when I came in, I had a friend ask me to go to a meeting, and this was in November. And I said, well, it's only November. I'll go back, but I'm not going back in November, because I wanted to eat through the holidays. It was critical that I eat through the holidays. And in Massachusetts, if any of you have ever lived in Massachusetts, they have more legal holidays than any state I know. So the legal holidays, legal. And then throw in the other holidays, started October 12th, which is Columbus Day. Big deal. The next one was my husband's birthday. And then Thanksgiving. Halloween. Oh, how could I forget Halloween? Halloween, which was 2 days after my husband's birthday. Halloween. Veterans Day, Thanksgiving. My husband was Italian. Oh, my God. There is nothing like an Italian feast. I swear. Okay, and then there were three birthdays between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Christmas, New Year's. Two more birthdays after New Year's. Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day. My husband was Italian. I've got a little bit Irish, but on St. Patrick's Day in Boston, everyone is Irish. It doesn't matter who you are. You are Irish. Easter, depending on when Easter fell, Patriots Day, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. I had about 6 weeks of non-eating. Labor Day to Columbus Day. That was it. Because there was a holiday every other time. So I told her, no, I wasn't coming back. That's why I waited till January 11th. And when I was, that last 6 months when I was eating, I was belligerent. I used to hide my eating. And my husband, I would tell my husband, I went grocery shopping. And I bought this, this, and this. And he'd see me, he'd talk to me, well, he'd talk to me all the time, but about Tuesday or Wednesday, he'd say, I thought you bought that. I said, I did. There's none left. I said, I bought it on Friday. It's now Tuesday or Wednesday. You thought it was going to be left? Because all that food was mine. Whether I used the excuse of buying it for my daughter, buying it for my husband, rarely did I really buy it for anybody but me. So all that food was mine. So I ate my way through the holidays until January 11th. So was I selfish? Yeah. Extremely. Self-centered? Oh, yeah. Because it was all about me. It's what I needed. It's what I, not, no. Not what I needed. It's what I wanted. And heaven help you if you got in the way of what I wanted, especially if it was food. Don't get in my way. Don't put a barrier up between me and food because you will lose. Fear, it took the steps for me to learn I'm fear-based. I'm afraid of everything. I'm fear-based. It should be Karen Fear, my last name. Because fear ruled my life. And there are times, even today, that fear can get a hold of me. And tell me something, get me into negative thinking. And it's work to get that out. But because of program, I can do that. Self-pity? Oh. Get out the violin. Bring out the dead horse. I'll beat it. I'll play the violin until the strings are broken. Because if you had my life, if you had my family, I think my microphone fell. Can you still hear me? Because of the microphone. Yeah, it fell down. If you had my experience, you'd feel sorry for yourself too. Because I was 359 pounds. One should feel sorry for me because God knows I am not responsible. Someone must have held me down and stuffed that food down my throat and forced me to eat because I couldn't possibly be responsible. Next slide, please. As long as we refuse to recognize that we have this debilitation, an ultimately fatal disease, we are not motivated to get the daily treatment for it which brings about our recovery. Denial of the truth leads to destruction. Sober words. I didn't want to recognize, but I've had personal experience with this ultimately fatal disease. Those are not just words. That's reality. This disease killed my husband. He was 57 and he died from this. There were complications, yes. But was he morbidly obese? Yes. And he chose not to do anything about it. And when he finally chose to do something about it, it was too late. He was 57. The love of my life. So do I think that's overdramatic? No. Do I think it will kill me? I know it will. I have no delusion anymore that this is a fatal disease. I have watched friends lose legs, fingers, kidneys, heart attacks, strokes, blindness. All from this disease. And the complications that this disease has. The denial is, it won't happen to me. I'm stronger. Next one. Ours is a spiritual program, not a religious one. Now, when I came in, I had a religion. But I chose to put God in a place on Sunday. And not all Sundays, just when I chose. That's where God was. Because I didn't believe he loved me. I didn't believe he cared what I ate. Why would God care what I ate? You know, there's so many other more important things that he has to take care of. And it's, I'll give this, okay, God, go take care of the wars and the fights and the horrible things that are happening. I'll take care of this little thing. Because I'm doing such a good job. I'm so good at taking care of Karen. So when they told me, my first meeting, they were about 80 people in this room, Saturday morning, Chelsea, Massachusetts. They were happy. They were smiling. They looked really good. They were talking about God and gratitude and how much their life had changed and how this was all because of OA. And I'll tell you, one, I didn't believe them. I thought they were all lying. Two, I hated everyone in that room. Because I was not happy. I was not grateful. I didn't believe God loved me or cared about me. And I thought they were all lying. Because this couldn't possibly be the answer. How could it be? How could this happen? So they didn't tell me that I couldn't have my religion. They said, but there are things you need to do. Ask God for help. Yeah, like that's going to work. I'm a cynic at heart. I'm a skeptic. And I have to experience it to believe it. So God has a sense of humor. So I worked in a hospital and I worked in a lab. And I kept telling my sponsor, I'm hungry. I am so hungry around 10, 11 o'clock. My thought was, I'll get more food because I'm hungry. And she said to me, ask God for help. I thought, like, that is really going to work. I'm going to ask God for help, and I'm not going to be hungry. Give me a break. So the day came. I was so hungry, I wanted to eat my arms. And it was like 10, 10:30 in the morning. But lunch is until noon. I said, okay, what have I got to lose? So I looked at the clock and I said, okay, God, it's 10:30. I am so hungry. I can't stand it. And my sponsor said, I did with an attitude, ask you for help. Give me 10 minutes. Just give me 10 minutes. And I walked away and I started doing something else. The next time I looked at the clock, it was noon. One of my first miracles. And I thought, oh, it worked. So that means I had to do more of that. So when my husband was dying, it was 8 months. He'd been sick for 7 years. And the last 8 months were really bad. Another God story. I have a lot of them, but I'll share this one with you. And I had a little dog at the time, a little poodle, and he was in and out of the hospital. When he was home and I was taking care of him, I'd walk the poor dog. She got walked more than anything. I'd walk the dog and say, "Dear God, I can't do this anymore. I'm so tired. I can't care for him. I can't do this. I'm just so tired." And then he'd go back in the hospital. And I go visit him in the hospital, and then I come home and I walk the dog again. I mean, I'm talking 3-4 times, 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd walk the dog again saying, "God, I'm not ready to, he can't go. I can't live without him. You can't take him. No, 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 God, you can't do this." 8 months. Finally, at the end of those 8 months, I said, "Your will, not mine." And he died. And I'm still here. God gave me the courage. It took 8 months for me to get there. I had to do all of that work so that when he finally passed away, it was okay. I'm still angry that he died because he left me. Purely selfish. But I understand why he died. Because he had suffered enough. And I do believe there is hell on earth. When I was eating, that was hell on earth. And I watched him die slowly. Next one. What we needed now was a way of being absent over the long haul and living sanely through the good times and the bad. That's a tall order. How do you live sanely? Through the parties, through the funerals, through the new job, through losing a job. Health issues, death, birth. How do you do that? We have an answer. Yep. Tools. So my question is to me and to all of you, do you use the tools? Do you use them every day? Is the commitment that you have? When I came into program, we always like to say in program, sponsors give us strong suggestions. What I know is my sponsor told me, you will do all the tools every day. You will have a plan of eating. You will write your food down. You will call me in the morning with what you're going to eat. You will eat what you commit. You will make sure it's in your refrigerator. And I had to learn early on to tell my family, which they weren't going to touch my food anyway, but this is mine, you can't eat it. Because this is what I need. Sponsorship. I have a sponsor today. I still call my sponsor 5 days a week. She only gives me the weekends off. And I've had the sponsor 6-7 years. She says she likes talking to me. So I call her every day. And she's a snowbird, which means she goes north for the summer. So I call her long distance. It's what I'm willing to do. Meetings. I go to 3 meetings a week. And there was a time when, Boston days, my sponsor, and one of my vet sponsors' rule was I had to see her at a meeting at least once a week. And she was changing meetings, so it meant that I had to travel 45 minutes one way to a meeting so I could see her. Now, where I lived, there was a meeting every day of the week within 15 minutes of me. So I would travel 45 minutes one way and back. And my husband was not thrilled. He did not like program. One, it took his eating buddy away and his cook and his baker. So he would, guilt was, it's not limited to nationalities, but Italians do it really well. I'm sure other nationalities, the Irish, I'm sure there are lots of nationalities, but he was a master at guilt. So he would say to me, "You're abandoning me." So I'm going to a meeting. I'll be back. You know, I'm coming back. That was escalated. "You're depriving your daughter of a mother." How am I doing that? But I would get in the car and go. Because I was more afraid of my sponsor than my husband. He was in it for the long haul. He was going nowhere. So I went. I still do meetings today. 3 meetings a week. And when I don't want to go to a meeting, when I am so tired or I don't feel well, it's just like, oh, I don't want to go. I'm on autopilot. I get in the car. I drive the car. And all the time I'm saying, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm too tired. I want to go to bed. I'm too whatever. When you're on autopilot and you've been doing it consistently, you just go. Because I don't know what I might miss. Because there's always the little guy saying, you don't have to do that. Why are you going to a meeting? You've been in program 20 years. You don't need a meeting. He talks to me a lot. I weigh and measure my food, all of it. And I abstain. I've got a lot of trigger foods, a lot. So my food plan is weighed and measured, 3 meals, nothing in between. No flour, no sugar, no caffeine, no artificial sweeteners. It works for me. I have a beginning and end to my meals. So as all of these are for me, it's important that I go to a meeting. One, that I show up. Because we have snowbirds, and when they come back for the winter, I'm the same size. Go figure. I'm 65 years old. Thank you. The lady up front said, you look good. I do. And that's not ego. I didn't bring my pictures. I did have my pictures with me, and I didn't bring them down because I didn't want to focus on the pictures. I wanted to focus on recovery. But I looked older at 40 than I do today. Miracle. Okay, telephone. I say this at every meeting when I have to read the telephone. And everybody knows it at my meetings. I hate the telephone. It must weigh some days 200 pounds. That 210 I lost is in the phone. So I hate the phone. But I make phone calls. Because I'm asked to make 3 phone calls a day. Now, I don't always get in 3. I may get in 2. But I do get at least 1 to 3 every single day. Why do I have to call anymore? Because I don't know when that little guy gets bigger, if I'm going to be able to resist it. So if I make a phone call and say, this is what's going on, I've got insurance. The telephone has come to me with miracles. I had a very close friend, a friend that I knew when I was 19, who passed away about 4 years ago. And when I got the call that she had passed, the first thing I did was call my sponsor. And she said, I'll be right over. And I said, no, I need to go to the hospital to say goodbye to her. She had already passed, but I wanted to spend some time with her. So I did. And the next call I got was from another friend in program. And she said, what can we do for you? And I said, you can be there for me. They came to her wake. They came to her funeral. And when I did my best friend's eulogy, and when I looked out, in the back 2 rows were my friends. And that came from doing a phone call, because I pick up the phone. Writing. I started writing my food down, and I thought, I'm covered. Because I said before, I want to do the least amount that I have to until I'm absolutely forced. So I wrote my food down, and I said, well, I'm writing. No, not good enough. So I had to get a journal. And I do a daily meditation, and I usually write on that, unless there's something going on in my life. And then I'll write about that. And as I said before, I never go back and read it because I can't. Because I don't read my own writing. It's pretty pathetic, but I don't need to reread it. You know, I don't. So I write every day. And then as I started doing my step work, I had to write a 4th step. And then you have to do all that writing. So I write every day. Literature, I read the OA. This year I'm in Voices of Recovery. I have 3 meditation books and I switch off every year. So this year it's Voices of Recovery, and that's the one I usually write something on what the reading is. I read the Big Book every day, 2 pages. I can't tell you how many times I've read the Big Book. This is what I know. There is a Big Book fairy. And what the fairy does, it comes in the middle of the night and adds words to the Big Book. You may not believe me, but I have proof. I have read the book for 20 years, and I still find things I've never read before. Now, if that's not a Big Book fairy, I don't know what is. So I read 2 pages of the Big Book every day. And this is not a promotion, but I have an e-reader. And when I travel, instead of carrying 6 books with me, I have it on my e-reader. So I can pull up wherever I am, everything. And I read on my e-reader. I love it. It was a luxury for me, but I love it. Literature. Well, I've discovered the literature. OA has a plethora of literature. It's wonderful literature. I love the OA 12 and 12. Because when you get to the fourth step and the questions they ask, they're focused. They're right on the money, those questions. Except, invariably, if I'm in a step study, invariably I have to read the steps questions. And it's so sad. It's just sad. I have no recent relative experience. I was like, I can't go back that far and remember it. So I just I make a joke about the sex questions and pray that someone else will read them so I don't have to read and comment on them. But, thank you. Action plan, the new one. When that first came out, I thought, oh no, I have to exercise because I refused. And my sponsor said to me, I was putting on a little bit of weight. And it was getting up there, and she was okay. And then she said, well, you know, we've got 2 options. You can exercise, or you could lose food. I said, well, exercise is not an option, because I don't exercise. So I lost food, and I'm a food addict. I'm also crazy. So I started exercising knowing that action plan was coming. And then when you read the definition, it's an option, but it's doing something on a daily basis. So now I exercise. Anonymity is crucial for me. I stand before you as a compulsive overeater. I don't know a lot of people's last names. My friends, people go to meetings, they know their first name. If we go to the hospital to visit one of our friends, they'll say, well, what's your last name? It's like, geez, I don't know. I had to call somebody and find out what her last name is so I could go visit her in the hospital. I don't care what anybody does for a living. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care. All I care is you're sitting in a room with other compulsive overeaters and I'm accepted. And I'm here. So it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what or who I am. It's that I'm here. And I do have service positions. Oh, we'll go right into service. I didn't do service in Massachusetts. I put away a chair. My idea of service was I showed up at a meeting. Isn't that great? So I had to, when I went to Florida, meetings weren't like they were in Massachusetts, so someone said to me, well, why don't you start a meeting? Oh, no. I went to intergroup. How many of you go to intergroup? Get to intergroup. If you've never been, go. I went to intergroup because I was pitching this idea, and the intergroup chair said, well, that's a great idea. Why don't you do that? I said, I'm the idea person. I don't have time. I had nothing else to do. But I didn't have time. So I started going to intergroup. I served most of the positions in a group. I was chair a couple times. I was treasurer, was vice chair. And then I became a rep, a region rep. Went to my first Region 8 conference. And at one of the Region 8 assemblies, the chair at the time said to me, and I served on the Ways and Means Committee, and the chair at the time said to me, you know anybody who wants to be treasurer? I said, well, yeah, I do. But my plan was to be chair of Ways and Means and then ease into treasurer. She said, well, okay, come to the board meeting. We need a treasurer. You know, I was treasurer at the end of that conference. Thank you. which led to going to World Service. How many have been to World Service? Fight to get to World Service. It is the most incredible. You either love it or you hate it. It was the most incredible experience I have ever had. And I was blessed and fortunate. I am now a General Service Trustee at World Service. And in my wildest dreams, a fat kid from Ohio who wasn't expected to amount to anything. Amazing. Program. Okay. How many more slides do I have?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I don't want to save enough time. Okay. Step four questions. What is this going to do with relapse and recovery? What this has to do with relapse and recovery, if you're doing the tools, all of them, if you're working your steps, relapse should not be a conclusion. So step four questions are pride, fear, grudges, anger, and negative thinking. What am I afraid of? Am I afraid? This was one of mine. I'm afraid of losing too much weight because someone will notice me, mainly a man. I'd already been noticed. brief story. I can't tell it. No, I can tell it briefly. I went to one of the commercial programs, lost 100 pounds. It took me a year. I was crazy and angry, but I lost 100 pounds. And we went down to Florida to visit my parents, and two things happened. My father said to me, we were going to the pool, and I had a robe on and a bathing suit, and he said, well, let me see this big change. And I opened up my robe, and he looked at me, one of my father's favorite terms, like I was abroad. And I went, uh-oh. He noticed me. My mother went out and bought me a new wardrobe of clothes that looked exactly like hers. In fact, they were her clothes. So in that week that I was there, I gained 20 pounds. 1 week. It took me 6 months to put on 100. True story. So what am I afraid of? Who have I got a grudge against? Who said something to me I didn't like? And I'm going to get back at them. I'm too proud to ask for help. I'm willing to help anybody, but I can't ask for help. Anger? I can't afford it. I can't afford anger. And I came from a pretty angry place. Negative thinking? If you told me the sun is shining, I'd tell you, wait, it'll rain eventually. If someone said, this is really good, yeah, but wait, it'll be bad soon. Next slide, please. These are some aspects leading to relapse. Some of these are mine. I own a lot of them. Impatient, depression, frustration, self-pity. Letting up on disciplines. I have a discipline program. I have to. If someone can eat moderate meals, God bless you. Because my moderate meal would be a platter. You know when they tell you to eat on the smaller plate? I'm not eating on a smaller plate. I want a platter. That would be my moderate meal. It can't happen to me. It can't. How could it? I'm so special. Next one. These are the principles. These are found at the end of the OA 12 and 12. I love them. I love the principles. Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, self-discipline, love of others, perseverance, self-awareness, spiritual awareness, and service. Aren't these incredible? The result of working the 12 steps. And it's not picking and choosing what steps you like. It's doing them all and doing them in order. 1 through 12. I once, in 1991 when I was around, I went into a step meeting, and they were on step nine. Men, step nine?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, step nine. I always get them, those up because I don't like them so much. I get them confused.
Mm-hmm.
I went into a step nine meeting, and they said, oh, you know, make an amends. And when you make an amends, you're going to feel so better, so much better. So I went home and called my best friend, who happened to be my roommate, when we were single. And I said, I'm really sorry for everything I did. Because I'm cross the dick. I'm really sorry for everything I did. And she kind of went, okay. And I hung up the phone and I thought, well, gee, I don't feel any better. I hadn't worked the first eight steps. Steps are in order. And these principles, I try to live by these every day.
I think I have one more.
Yeah. I love this. And I want to thank Jerry publicly for doing my PowerPoint. I am technology challenged. But she just added this today because this for me is so important. Each day that we live well, we are well. And we embody the joy of recovery, which attracts others who want what we have found in OA. Page 106, 12 and 12. Away. Today I live well. Today I live well. Today I'm happy. I've lost a lot when I came into program. I've lost a lot of people that I dearly loved. But I'm living well today. And I have an obligation to return this body, which was a gift, in the best condition I can return it in. Thank you. Yeah. I've left time purposely to take questions. So if you have questions, I will answer them to the best of my ability from the Ask It Basket. What can I tell you? I can tell you, well, I don't do jokes. I don't, but I do funny stories because the other gift I was given when I came back in the program was a sense of humor. I always had one, but this sometimes it acts out. So a friend of mine, she served on the board at Region 8, and we were traveling to Little Rock, Arkansas. And we had a flight into Houston, and then we had a little puddle jumper on the return flight. Now, assembly for any board member, you're very busy. So on the way back, Jerry will back, as I said, I don't know. Jerry just stepped out for a minute. When she comes back, she'll back that up for the next slide. So when we got to Houston and we're schlepping laptops and luggage and all this stuff, I probably had a cooler too because I travel with my food. There were those carts, those mobile carts, you know, that'll pick up handicaps. And the guy was, and we came at the very last gate of the sub gate, and we had to go to the very last gate on the other side. We had time, but we were tired. So I said to my friend, you want to get on? Because he said, you ladies want to ride? So I thought, sure, we got on. Now, this is my friend's fault. So my friend said, oh, I feel like royalty. Now, when I'm tired, it's not really good. So I started doing this. For those who are hearing the tape, I'm waving. I'm doing a queen wave. I'm doing it to people in the restaurant. I'm doing it to people who are sitting at gates. People are starting to wave back. Now I'm encouraged because I'm getting attention. So I continue to do this. And my friend is appalled, but then she got over and we were doing this. And people were laughing and smiling, but the best part was we were almost to the end of our gate and there were about 15 family members waiting to go somewhere. And as I was doing this, they were smiling going, I don't know who you are, but it's okay. When we got off the little tram, the guy said, I don't know what you're doing, but you're the only person who's had fun riding this. So you never know what I'm going to do. Okay, first question. How do you stick with the food you committed for the day? There's no option. It's not an option, do I want to stick to it? I've committed it. That's what a commitment is. I've committed to my food plan. Now, if it goes bad, I live alone. It's not going bad. Now, something may happen. I rarely go out to eat. I am financially challenged, so I don't need a whole lot. By my choice. So at work, if they're going out as a group, I know ahead of time. It's a commitment, not an option. I stick to it. Now if I get sick, like I was coming back and I got sick with bronchitis coming back from Boston, went to visit my daughter. I still laid off my food plan. There might be a little tweaking. I usually eat raw vegetables at lunch because it's easier, and then I eat cooked at dinner. So I just changed with my sponsor. I called my sponsor and said, I just can't do a salad. I just can't. She said, okay, just do all cooked. But I don't make those decisions on my own. Negative thinking gets me obsessive. What helps you? Turn it around. When you have a negative thought, I was taught in program, what is good about this situation? What's good about it? It's hard sometimes to find something good in a negative thought. Why do I have to do this? Why not? My husband once asked me that question. We were sitting around at a table. We were sitting around at dinner. And he said, why did I get this? Why did I get cancer? I said, I don't know. But what I know is, why not? This isn't rocket science. We want to complicate things so we don't get down to the basics. If we complicate it, then we can dance all around it. And when we stop dancing, we're just left with us. What's the role of self-forgiveness? I'm still working on that one. What is the role? I thought that there was something wrong with me. When I was born, I didn't go home to my family of origin. I went to a friend's house. And I didn't come home to my family until I was 2 or 3 months old. And when I did come home, I have a brother who's 6 years older than I am. He tried to kill me by putting a pillow over my face. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I was told, my mother told me I wasn't wanted. She'd already had 4. I was told I was different. Self-forgiveness says I'm worth something. I have value as a human being. God loves me. It only has been in the last 5 years that I have come to accept that God loves me. Unconditional. Five years that I had that realization. God loves me unconditionally. And God doesn't make junk. So it's so important. That's the step work. Self-forgiveness is the step work. 4 and 5. 6 and 7. All of them. That's the critical work. Could you put the list of the things on the screen again? Okay. We did that one. Oh, good. What is the most important thing to do to help a struggling sponsee? Well, if they're struggling, are you struggling? So what I tell my sponsees, my program is solid. I give you what I have. What do you want your program to be? If you're struggling, why? Are you doing the tools? Are you working the steps? What's going on that you're struggling? Have you accepted you're a compulsive overeater / food addict? Are you willing to do the work? I've had sponsees, flounder. Why are you doing this? But my program is solid. No one can take my program away from me. No one can take my abstinence away from me. No one. And what I give to my sponsees is that. Whether they accept it or not, that's up to them. The best you can do to a sponsee who's floundering? Tools? Steps? How did you get abstinent? How do you stay abstinent? That's what we give to sponsees. When you say that you haven't relapsed in many years, do you mean on the balance for literally not for a moment? There have been times I'm unbalanced. Do I pick up the food? No. Food's not an option. Food's off the table. Do I have moments of doubt? Sure. Do I waver in my program? Sometimes. Does it last? No. Pick up the phone. My sponsor knows my voice so well. I call her every day and she'll say, "How are you doing?" "Oh, good." "Oh, no, you're not." She can hear it. People see it at meetings. When I go to meetings, they'll say, "You're off. What's wrong?" Have I done it perfectly in the last almost 10 years? No. Is my food clean? Yep. Are there times when I overeat because I'm eating out in the restaurant? I do the best I can. I find eating out is a trigger, so I don't eat out a lot. When I'm around family, like I went to Boston to be with my husband's family, that's hard. But you know what? I've been doing this consistently for so many years. They all know what I eat. And they respect what I do. They don't understand it. They may not like it, but they respect me. Because they'll say, "Oh, we've got, my nephew is a gourmet cook, and he cooks my vegetables separate." He'll say, "I know you can have this and this, you know, and, you know, has things for me that I can have. I'm credible." Would I like to be normal? Because I don't really believe there's any really normal people. There really aren't. Not really. I mean, some of the people out there that call themselves normal, no. I'd rather be a compulsive overeater and food addict and have the tools and the steps, because I believe if the world lived by the steps, we wouldn't have the problems we have. That's a editorial comment. You mentioned fear. Can get you into negative thinking, but it takes work to get that idea out. What do you do? An example? Fear. I'll give you a silly example of fear, and then I'll give you a serious one. I got a GPS. I argue with GPSs. Because I know so much better than a GPS, how to get someplace. So I argued with it. And I was traveling with a friend, and we were going up north to do a workshop. And the GPS said, "Take a right after this." And I said to her, "But before they said that, they said take a left." We were 45 minutes out of our way because she listened to me and not the GPS. That's a silly example of fear, because I'm afraid. I'm afraid to trust a computer instrument for directions, because I know so much better. I'll pull up MapQuest and a GPS, study them, and pray that the GPS is right. So one of my tests is, I put on the GPS, and I say to myself, "Okay, God, who's my better co-pilot than me, I'm going to do exactly what the GPS says. Trust." Another, a more serious fear. I'm 65. I've been at a job, I'm starting my sixth year. And when I had my last review, he said, "We have audits." I work in billing. And we have audits, and we have financial errors, and we have procedural errors. Well, financial errors are lethal. You might as well pack up your desk, because you're on your way out. And so he said to me, you know, I don't have financial errors, but your procedural errors are a little high, and they're going to crack down. Now I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job. I'm hoping to keep my job until August, September of 2013. I also have macular degeneration, which is starting to manifest itself. I'm afraid I'm going to go blind. I'm afraid I'm going to be homeless, living, you know, out of a shopping cart under a bridge somewhere. It's not reality, but I'm afraid. So what do I do with that? Today I have a home. Today I have a job. Today I can see. I help out a woman who has macular degeneration. So I'm reminded of the things that I need to do for her and how it's helping me. It's genetic also, at least in my family. My sister has it. My mother had it. And I traveled with my sister to Europe in October, November of this year. And I had an opportunity to see she's not in program. Oh, gosh, she needs program. Not for weight, just for the crazies in her head. And I had an opportunity to see how fearful she is because of her sight. So ask God for help. Today I can see. I live today. I try not to worry about tomorrow or the next day or a year from now or, you know, best laid plans. You know, I may have to retire early. I may make it. Today I do the best job I can at work. Try to stay focused. Be more consistent in my job. Turn it around. Turn around the negative thinking. Turn around the fear. Acknowledge the fear. Turn it around. And do I still have time? Am I over time?
No, you're okay. You have
15 more minutes. Okay, I've actually gone through all the questions. did I answer the fear question? What do I do? An example? It may seem simplistic. You know, I ask God for help. It really is that simple. It really is that simple. You know, ask God for help. And I told you that 5 years ago I realized I was in church and there was a service. And it dawned on me, raised in a religion, went to convent school when I was through high school. My mother so wanted a nun. Did not happen. The nuns and I both agreed that that was not a good thing. So I happened to be in church at a service 5 years ago. And it dawned on me. Felt it in my soul. God loves me. I have no doubt. I knew he loved you. I did not believe he loved me. But it's taken me this many years, 20 years program, 15 years of program to realize that God loved me. Last year, in church again, knowing God loves me, no doubt in my mind, the thought comes, how do I show God how much I love him? Where did that come from? How do I demonstrate my love for God? And I thought program, well, you know, I do the steps, I do the tools, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing program. Voice said, how do you demonstrate to God you love him? How do you show him? And it was important for me. So what came to mind was I had a really bad mouth. I could put swears together. It was one end of the, and I wasn't, I had no problem letting them fly. So I thought, how can I demonstrate? And over the years, my mouth has cleaned up. It wasn't nearly as bad as it was years ago. So I made a commitment. I don't swear. It's not easy. Because every now and again, my repertoire was crap, damn. That was pretty much my repertoire, and sometimes they all came together. So every now and again, one of them will fly, oh, I didn't mean to say it, and I'll apologize to God. What it offered me time to do was to stop and to think. To stop and think. And I am a firm believer that there are words in our language that can better describe what's going on. I hear language today that appalls me. And the words that fly out of teenagers' mouths, and adults, I'm appalled. But I can't do anything about them. I can only change me. So those are how I demonstrate to God that I love Him. It can't nearly match what I've been given, but it's a start. I'm almost thinking, maybe I won't go to that service again, you know, in the spring for fear of what's going to come out. But it's been a miracle for me to have spiritual experiences. And I've had a few of them. And it's only because of the program. When we were in Italy, we traveled Italy, we were in a small little chapel. Beautiful, but very tiny, nothing grand, you know, no cathedral. And I felt the presence of God. Felt it. I'm a child of God and He loves me. You are children of God. Higher power, you know, spirit of the universe. I have no problem with the word. He, she, it. It, that becomes for me another dance. It's another dance around being wanting to be in charge. So I don't dance anymore. You know, it's, and it's okay. There was another small chapel again that we went into. Same experience. Felt the presence of God. And the last one, we lit candles in one little church, my sister and I lit candles, and I felt again that connection. Am I unique? Am I special? No. No. God didn't make me, well, He did make me special because He gave me away. You know, I did so much damage to my body that I found a way. So I think, even though I have, does anybody else have any questions? Because we've got 15 minutes. I'll be happy to take them from the floor. Sure. Yeah, I really skipped over that, didn't I? It's not a proud time in my life. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll repeat the question. I've been asked to speak about that my relapse time. My husband had died. I didn't have a strong support system in Florida. Didn't have it. I started thinking I was cured. Now, I hadn't had diet soda in 10 years. Hadn't had a diet soda. Decided I'm cured. I forgot why I gave up diet soda. So I started saying to myself, I'll have one can a day. By the end of the week, I was drinking 2 liters a day. Said, I'm too busy to go to meetings. When you don't want to go to a meeting, that's when you go to a meeting. Too busy to go to meetings. I had a sponsor. She was long distance. Didn't really connect with the tools and the steps. Started believing that if I drove through the drive-thru, picked up abstinent food, it wasn't, ate on the way home, finished my meal, went home, I was abstinent. That little guy on my shoulder was huge because I didn't consider that first bite. Now, I don't even know how long I was out there. That's the truth. I don't know. My husband died January 1st, 2000. And I came back in a program, My mother never left. I was there, but not physically. I came back to a meeting sometime January, February of 2012. I gained 40 pounds. Only 40. Now, my history is I can gain 100 in 6 months. So I only gained 40, only. But I came back in with a tail between my legs and was told at that point, and a lot of, when I first went down, there weren't a lot of people who weighed and measured. But I found a person that I really thought had something I wanted. And she agreed to sponsor me. And what I said to her is, this is how I have to do it. I have to weigh and measure. I have to commit it. I have to do all the tools. And I have to do them every day. It's what worked before. And that's what I did. And she had heard about weighing and measuring and thought, oh, maybe. So we have a nice little group now that basically weighs and measures. But all of those things that led to relapse, I did. I forgot who I was. I thought I was cured. And I tell you, I had one sponsor. I'll never forget her saying this to me. Said to me, well, you know, the big book doesn't say you have to go to meetings for the rest of your life. You can be recovered. It's all I needed. All I needed. That one little door opened and said, you are recovered. The biggest lie I've ever been told. I believed it. She wasn't responsible for my believing it. So I spent some years out there. I changed jobs. My husband died. I changed jobs. I was traveling on the road. I was eating, not in between meals, but as I said, you know, I configured that if I ate from the fast food and finished at home, I was abstinent. Another big lie I told myself. I'm not proud of that time, but it's important to know. And I don't ever want to go back there, ever. Ever. Are there any other questions? We have a few more minutes. I picked and choose my religion. Oh, the question is, did I ever leave my religion and did I come back to it? Yeah, there were times I was pretty angry. I was pretty angry at it. Because I wasn't hearing what I needed. I wasn't listening. I heard it. I just didn't want to hear it. You know, I wasn't listening. So when I came into program and was introduced to God is kind and gentle, I needed that formal religion. It's what I grew up with. I wasn't willing to change my religion. I didn't want to. I wanted to go back to that religion and experience it again from a spiritual standpoint. And today I do it not because I have to, not because anybody says, if you don't, you're going to hell. I practice my religion today because I want to. It gives me more. It hasn't changed, quite honestly. It's changed a little. So what's changed? Me. The only thing I can change is me. The only thing I'm responsible for is me. I can't make anybody happy. I spent most of my young years and teenage years trying to make my mother happy. What made her happy one day didn't make her happy the next day. But I was always trying. And then I stopped trying. And she passed away. I was in program 6 months and she passed away. And I was able to do a ninth step with her before she passed away. And I was only on my fourth step. Another miracle. Any other questions? Yes, way in the back. Wait till the applause dies next door. Okay, now I can. So let me say this if I've got it right. What is the perception of a healthy body weight as opposed to body image as relates to society? I understand. The health, unhealthy body signals that say you have to be pencil thin or thin or what that attraction will happen. Having been fat most of my life, I never thought I'd be thin. And my body image has not quite caught up. And I've been this way except for those 40 pounds I put on for 19 years. So my body image is still stuck that there are times when I feel fat. Those are feelings. Those aren't facts. And one of the fears, I think, for those of us who've been sexually abused or abused emotionally or however the abuse is, that it's got to do with a lot of how we look. So that's a real concern of mine, because I had a father who looked at me like I was a broad, and that's not a good term. In fact, I really hate that word, but that describes it. And there's all the other things on television and media that say thin is where to be, and you'll be sexy or attractive or whatever that is for a woman. So my reaction to that is I'm trying to keep healthy in that perspective. I want to be healthy. And I want to be, this is thin for me. I have been thinner than this, and I looked horrible. So it's a healthy weight. And catching the mind up to the body, I think, is a lifelong job for me. You know, men aren't knocking down my door, trust me. Been on a few dates, that's a whole other story. Trust me. Dating in your 60s, I only dated one man and I married him. So I don't have a whole lot of experience dating. Dating in your 60s, not much has changed from the teenagers. I'm sorry. They just hasn't. They still want the same thing. I digress. Yeah, I got 3 minutes to 2 minutes to answer that question.
Okay.
I got 2 minutes. Body image is an issue. I won't deny that. I love how I look with clothes on. With clothes off, it's not pretty. Things are falling down. I do believe God has a sense of humor, because pretty soon something's going to be at my knees, and my knees are going to be at my ankles. I'm going to be the upside down pyramid. Now I'm going to be, yeah, whatever. So I think it's got to do with step work and tool work, so that our minds are not caught in, well, when I get thin, I'm going to be, oh, so hot. I'm not any hotter now than I was, you know, before. I wasn't very hot then. But my mind has changed. I'm certainly more open and outgoing. So I don't believe that if you've got a mindset, I think more far away is the other side of that. The fear of being thin and having that attraction. Because I think a lot of us come from abuse and cause getting that attention, we don't know what to do with it. So while the rest of the world is out there saying, you know, being thin is, you know, where to be, and the models and the stars and all that, look at how great they look and how sexy they are, you know, they have bodily functions just like us. And no different when you come right down to it. But for us, I think it's more important to have those steps in place so when something happens and there's an attraction, that it's handled in a manner that is respectful, and we don't go over the top. Did that answer it? You're welcome. Well, my time is up. We filled those hour and a half. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I would like to close with a serenity prayer. If we'd all stand up and hold hands.